And welcome back to another episode of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside Jonah Tolles. And we are here in Indianapolis at the Combine. Really excited. Really cool experience being here. It's been a while since we have recorded, but we want to make sure we get some information for you guys. And we have plenty of nuggets to share with you. So, Jonah, how's it feel to be here in Indianapolis, man?
Man, I'm just like you. First time here in Indianapolis at the Combine. It's a different experience for sure. But talking to these players, getting to know their purpose and their mission, it's just like the Senior Bowl, man. Talking to these players in person, it's a different kind of experience.
It is. And, you know, we saw some of the things that we were looking forward to, and then we've seen some new things that kind of rubbed us the wrong way, just because that's the great thing of coming to the Combine. So it's a really unique experience. If you're ever on the fence about coming to Indianapolis, we both highly, highly recommend it. So some of the things we're going to talk about, we're just going to recap what happened yesterday in the on-field drills with the quarterbacks, the receivers, and the tight ends. And then we're going to give a large, large preview of what's to come today, actually, with the offensive line and the running back. So we're really looking forward to that. But I'll turn it over to you first. With the quarterbacks, the tight ends, and the receivers, who stood out to you the most?
Man, I think who's had a great week that, you know, and the whole talk's been about Tua Tagovailoa, Joe Burrow, and what they were going to say in the press conferences and whatnot. I think the player who's had the best week so far is Jordan Love. In terms of, you know, I thought he aced the interview in terms of what he said. He really was accountable for his decision-making. That's what I think decision-makers wanted to hear. And what he showed in the on-field drills, throwing the ball, and it probably helped. It was with the second group of guys, right, that weren't as good. Yeah. But the ball just came out of his hand different. And watching that, like, you know, live, you know, you were able to watch that live and be able to see that. It's just different, right? Yeah. And that arm strength, you can just see that. And the way he's able to throw with accuracy, throw with anticipation, I thought he aced it. And I think in terms of looking at his draft stock, I think, you know, Indianapolis is probably his floor at this point.
Yeah. And for you guys that can't see me right now, of course, I'm standing up and clapping right now. You can't hear it, but I'm clapping. Because I'm glad you finally came around on Jordan Love. And I wanted to get you out of the DeShone Kizer comparison, which I do see. Yeah. But you seem to be warming up to him a little bit.
Yeah, it's not like DeShone Kizer my comparison. It's more so that my concern, right? It's like that's probably his floor. And I think that's what I was more concerned of. But what you saw in Indianapolis was that upside we've been touting for months. The arm strength, the ball placement and flashes. He looked like the best throwing quarterback I saw in terms of better than Herbert, better than Easton, better than Hurts. I think he's the best quarterback throwing. He's obviously Burrow and Tua didn't throw.
Yeah.
But Love, to me, looked like the most natural throw of the football on Wednesday.
The thing about Jordan Love is that you have to understand what happened to him last year. And you just look at the numbers, 32 touchdowns, 6 interceptions in 2018. Comes back, 20 touchdowns, 17 interceptions last year. But there was a lot of variables that contributed to that. And he lost his head coach, of course, that went to Texas Tech, that you're very familiar with. Lost a bunch of weapons. Darwin Thompson, Dax Raymond are two of his big weapons that he lost to the draft last year. So you're adjusting to – he said it was the same scheme, but even though it's the same scheme, you have to adjust to different surroundings just because offenses are all about timing, especially being in the air raid, which he was in. So all they have all of these timing routes, all these things that he has to get accustomed to, but he had to adjust to a plethora of different weapons.
How many closed window throws did he have to make in college? He might be the only quarterback in this draft or any quarterback in the last 5 years who's going to throw more open windows in the NFL than he did in college.
Right.
And it's one of those things where he was designed, I think, to really digress this past season just because of what happened with the coaching situation. Matt Wells and his entire offensive coordinator staff went over to Texas Tech, a lot of the weapons he lost, and then, you know, the 17-interception season. And so we saw that, and then we look at the combine, able to ace the interview process, look at the best quarterback in the throwing drills. I really do believe that Indianapolis is his floor at this point, and I wouldn't be surprised if he reaches that top 7 to 8 picks at this point.
Yeah, and then Lewis Riddick came out and tweeted yesterday that there's a lot of buzz about Love, and I commented on that and said, don't be surprised to see him go in the top 10. Like you said, his floor is probably Indianapolis.
Oh, they wouldn't pass
him. I think that's probably
his
floor.
Remember at the Senior Bowl, we're sitting next to Bill Polian and the Colts, and
Frank
all the Colts brass. Yes, Frank Reich and all those guys, they could not take their eyes off of him. I remember watching practice. It didn't matter who was out there. It was Polian and Reich. They were eyed in on Jordan Love.
And I think that's an ideal situation for him just because, like I said, I see the Kizer comparisons, and I actually agree with it as far as his floor. But I think the difference between the two is that Kaiser was thrown out there as a rookie.
I agree.
And with Jordan Love, he could end up as a similar type of player if you throw him out there right away.
Exactly.
But you can't do that.
Yeah.
They already have Jacoby Brissett in-house. He has 1 year left on his deal. Mm-hmm. So it's a perfect situation. And he has to be coupled with known quarterback development. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Frank Reich has been. He's done it in every stop he's been pretty much with Kansas City and then with the Eagles as well. So I think that's an ideal situation for him. You let Jacoby Brissett ride it out as a starter, or let's say he plays 7-8 games as the bridge guy, and then Jordan Love eventually takes over. So Indianapolis definitely is a great fit for him.
Yeah, and so I just want to ask you this because, you know, you're the resident quarterback guru. I want to get your thought. I'm the one talking here, so I called you the guru. But I just want to get your thoughts on these quarterbacks and who you were impressed by, whether it was in the interview process or throwing the ball yesterday.
Yeah, so Tua is one guy I was really impressed with, and the only reason he was here is to do interviews and meet with the media, just because he can't do anything else just because of the hip and some of the other injuries he has sustained. So I think he needed to absolutely kill the interview process, and I think he has done that thus far from just speaking to some of the people that I have talked to. And then with the media, I thought he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
And you were there. Whenever you encounter Tua, I mean, he just lights up the room. He's a guy whose presence is just – is terrific. That's the only way really to describe it. And then not just that, asking guys like Jedrick Wills and some of these other Alabama guys, they have nothing but glowing reviews about him. So that just goes to his character, his leadership, and some of the charisma he displays. So Tua is one guy I definitely think was terrific. Another guy, I thought Jordan Love was good, and I don't want to go on and on about him just because we've already talked about him. But Jalen Hurts was outstanding just because he's a guy that exemplifies poise. And it's not just on the field. It's an off-the-field standpoint as well. He was up at the podium. He took the questions directly in the face. Of course, he had teams ask you to play other positions just because that's just what happens with athletic quarterbacks. And he didn't get offended by it or anything like that. He said, I'm here to compete. And I think he was terrific yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I know he's getting a lot of buzz right now just of how he performed yesterday. From the throwing portions, I thought he was outstanding. And we've seen him gradually get better. He wasn't great the first day at the Senior Bowl, but as he's starting to get this NFL coaching, he's starting to tweak his mechanics, getting used to dropping back under center, some of these things. So you're starting to see that progression happen a little bit, even though it's a small microcosm and a little snapshot, but it may be a little bit of a clue towards his development on the next level.
You know, and another position that worked out yesterday was the wide receivers, right? And so, you know, and with a combine, it's like a box checking process, right? It's a checklist. You know, who's gonna CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy?
Yeah.
We didn't expect them to, you know, really rock the combine, but you know, 4.45 40, 4.51, both jumped well, both caught the ball, both looked really good in the drills. Mm-hmm. I think they both really cemented their status as the top three receivers.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything bad to really, you know, get off your radar. They didn't do really anything really elite to say, oh wow, top five pick.
Mm-hmm.
But what's about Henry Ruggs?
Yeah.
4.28, 42-inch vertical. 10-9 broad. He did exactly what we thought he would. What do you see from him in those drills? They think, could he be the first receiver drafted?
Mm-hmm.
Because a team may look at him and see, man, he might be like a Tyreek Hill kind of player for us.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw it with John Ross a couple years ago, and I think he's a much better prospect than what John Ross was coming out, just because I think he's a much better and more diverse route runner. I think he plays much stronger as well, but I mean, he was so explosive he hurt himself yesterday. So that was pretty cool to see from him. Just as far as like seeing him in person,
right?
He just moves at a different tempo.
Yeah.
And you see that on his film, but actually seeing it there, it's like he wows you.
It was a shame that he wasn't able to run the routes yesterday because I think one of the most underrated parts of his film is that route running.
Yeah.
And people think he's just a speed guy. He's not. He runs really, he had Christian Fulton spinning when they played LSU.
Yeah.
So he really impressed me. Another guy that did really well was Denzel Mims. It's about 4.38, 40-yard dash, 6.66 three cone.
Yeah.
And jumped well. He might be the biggest riser of this pre-draft process at the wide receiver position. Because remember, at the Senior Bowl, no one could guard him. And then he goes out to the combine, puts all those numbers up. Where's his stock right now?
I don't think it's crazy to say that he could go at the top of the second round. I think that's fair for him. Yeah, absolutely. And he's a guy that came into the year. Remember, he went back to school.
That's right.
Just because he got a bad grade from the committee last year.
Yeah.
And the thing about Mims is that he wanted to go back to prove that he's not just a speed guy. Just because you heard he's a track guy, he's a straight line guy. But everybody immediately pegs that as being a, you know, straight ahead runner in a sense.
Right.
And he wanted to prove that I'm much more than that. I'm very skilled as a route runner. I can get off press. I'm not just your typical Baylor receiver. And that's what happens a lot with these NFL draft stocks and whichever school they come from.
Yeah.
You see Baylor receiver, oh, you immediately think Corey Coleman. Remember Corey Coleman coming out?
Yep,
so
absolutely.
That's just some of the things that he wanted to disprove, and I think he's done a great job of that. And I don't think of any prospect, not just receiver, I don't think there's any prospect that's helped themselves from the Senior Bowl to now than Denzel Mims.
It's a strong statement. I absolutely agree with you on that. Two other receivers I want to mention here, Justin Jefferson and Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
Both players tested really well. Brandon Ayuk ran a 4.5 flat, jumped 40 inches in the vertical. Justin Jefferson ran a 4.43, something faster than we thought was going to happen. And they both look extremely fluid and explosive in those drills and running routes. I know Brandon Ayuk, one of the biggest questions with him was, can he run a full route tree?
Mm-hmm.
He looked really good in those drills. Justin Jefferson looked like a whole different plant than some of these other guys.
Yeah.
So I want to get your thoughts on those two guys and how they looked in Indy.
So with Jefferson, and just talking to some of these LSU DBs, Christian Fulton and Grant Delpit, they're like, man, where did that come from, that he was slow? And I thought that was really interesting. So just seeing him come out there and run a 4.43, I thought that was really good for him. And I think he probably got the slow tag just because he only plays slot at LSU. And then
stereotype.
Whenever you think of somebody in the slot, you think they're probably slow and
stigma.
They can't get off press on the outside. So I think that's a common misconception about him. And I'm really glad that he ran a 4.43. But just watching him in person, his routes are incredible, man.
Oh,
the way he's able to sink his weight, get in and out of his breaks, and things of that nature. The way he breaks at the top of his routes was just phenomenal. And then what stood out the most was how strong his hands were. And you got guys like Jacob Eason and Justin Herbert firing the ball at him in the gauntlet, and he's just squeezing the ball, letting it go, and run with it. So Justin Jefferson definitely was one guy that really did stand out.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, Jefferson, Ayuk, these are guys that are both explosive. But, I mean, just another guy that really I want to talk about just one second here is Michael Pittman Jr.
Yeah.
Because I think of all the receivers there, he had the biggest 40-yard dash time. Because we did not know if he was a 4.6 guy,
yeah.
a 4.5, late, a low 4.55 guy. He ended up running a 4.52, jumped really well, ran a sub 7.3 cone.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at big wide receivers that can move like him, I think you have to value him in that day two range. And I think he really solidified himself in that status, ran good routes, looked really good with his hands. I'm struggling to see why people are not ranking him in the top 100 at this point.
Oh,
he's answered all those questions.
Yeah.
In terms of 100 catches, over 1,000 yards,
double-digit
touchdowns, major program, looked great in the Senior Bowl, looked great in Indianapolis.
I think it's the injury concerns that happened with him just because prior to this year, I mean, he battled a shoulder and an ankle injury. He had to get surgery on them as well. So I think that was something that was out there about him, just the injury concerns. And then at USC, they really didn't let him do a lot just because they treated him as a vertical guy that was just a jump ball, go up and get it type. But as you dive more into his film, they start to let him do a little bit more, but it still really wasn't a whole bunch. So I think with all his highlight plays, most of them are him towering over everybody, jumping up and going to get the ball. But once you dive into his film a little bit more, you see him running those slant routes, you see him running outs, curl routes, all of that. So he's out to disprove that. Running a 4.52 was absolutely big for him just because straight line speed was something that was a bit of a question mark out there about him, but I thought he did a good job on that. So what's your thoughts on Pittman?
Yeah, and above all else, you mentioned also him on the field. Above all else, he's just a great person. I met him at the Jason Witten Gala 2 weeks ago at the College Football Man of the Year. He was a finalist. Trey Smith ended up winning the award. But great person. Ended up following back with him at the Combine Presser. Just a great kid, and you really want to root for him because he does everything the right way. Someone asked him, you know, waiting for the rest of you in this corner, in this wide receiver class, do you feel like you're being overlooked? He said, I don't worry about any of them. Like, I don't worry about the rankings. I worry about myself and improving my own game.
Nice.
I thought that was a really professional answer.
Yeah.
Professional, does it the right way. I think above all else, I'm rooting for him because he's a really good person. And the fact that he ran that 4.5 2.40 and looked really fluid in the drills really helps confirm that.
That's really good stuff. And, you know, I'm really interested to see exactly how he does during this pre-draft process, the rest of the pre-draft process, I should say. But before we move on, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, and we are back. Now we've talked about quarterbacks and receivers already. Now let's get into probably the most interesting group, for lack of interest, I should say, of the evening, and that's the tight end group. And, you know, there's no headliner name at the top. There's no T.J. Hockenson. There's no Noah Fant or Irv Smith Jr. at the top of this class like we saw last year. But everybody's order is different. And, you know, a common consensus down here in Mobile is, who's your top tight end? and I've gotten five different answers from everybody. Some say Hunter Bryant, some say Adam Troutman, some say Harrison Bryant. So there's just so many different variations of rankings, and I don't think anybody really separated themselves yesterday, even though I thought they ran much slower than anticipated. Mm-hmm. And then a guy like Albert Okwuegbunam runs a 4.49.
Where did that
nowhere.
Come from?
Yeah, yeah, a guy we were hoping to see at the Senior Bowl, but he wasn't even invited down there.
No.
So, I mean, it's just really interesting with this tight end class. I have no idea what to think of them right now. So just what's your overall thoughts on what happened yesterday, and who do you like the most in this group?
My final takeaway from the tight ends in Indianapolis that Chase Claypool is tight end one.
Him and Juwan Johnson.
Yep, and Juwan Johnson from Oregon. Move them all to tight end. But yeah, I mean, just I really did like Chase Claypool. I think he could really move in that wide tight end role. He had a great combine. 4.42, 40-inch vertical. I think a lot of NFL teams are going to view him in that move tight end role. And no, I wouldn't make him my top tight end because I still haven't seen him, you know, play the in line. I think he was having an adjustment period. But I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, for just the traditional tight ends we've seen, Adam Troutman, he ran a 4.8, a little slower than we thought, but also ran a 6.783 comp. And you can I can argue that's more important with his ability to turn, run routes. We saw that in Mobile.
Right.
He was able to run routes better than any tight end prospect there. So I thought it was an overall okay day for all these tight ends. Cole Kmet, I think, just checked the boxes.
Yeah.
He ran a 4.740, which is faster than a lot of people thought he would run.
Much faster than what I thought he would.
Yep, and he jumped well, 37.5 in the vertical. Yep. So I think Anthony Kmet looked the best of anyone running the routes in Indianapolis in terms of the drills and all that. The blocking drill looked really good as well. So Kmet, to me, is like your traditional inline tight end. Mm-hmm. They really just checked the boxes. Hunter Bryant ran a little slower than we thought.
Yeah.
You know, if you come in at 6'2", 245,
yeah,
you better test like an athlete. And a lot of Evan Engram comparisons, right? Evan Engram ran 4.4.
Yeah, those are long.
So, yeah, so you're looking more like a Gerald Everett as opposed to an Evan Engram. So.
Yeah.
The tight ends, I think, only left us with more questions than answers.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see what comes out, you know, before April. But I'm with you. I think uninspiring performance from the tight ends overall. And Jared Pinkney, again,
yeah,
I mentioned, 5-second 40-yard dash.
Yeah.
How can you come in at 6'4", 245, and run a 5-second 40?
It's not good.
I don't know where you would take him at this point because, like I said, at Mobile, he's not the sum of his parts yet.
Yeah.
He's a guy you're drafting for what he'd become.
Right.
And based on what we saw in Indianapolis yesterday, his athletic upside is not there.
No.
So I'm not sure where you would take it.
And it's like we said at the Senior Bowl, he kind of rubbed us the wrong way a little bit, had some bad body language, and he just didn't look like he was going full force in the drills that was going on. And then in the scrimmage sessions, it was just weird what was going on with Jared Pinkney. We're not really sure what was going on there. But, I mean, you summed it up perfectly. He's really uninspired to what happened with this group. And then the most ironic thing was Albert Ho running 4.49.
Oh,
I still can't believe that. That probably was the biggest shock of any time.
I think it was.
Of the day,
I think it was.
So, I mean, who knows where he goes now? Some teams are going to value speed. Even though he doesn't play 4.49, they're going to say, oh, maybe Mizzou just didn't incorporate him in the scheme properly.
Yeah.
And maybe we can get him playing a little bit faster.
Well, and that's the thing, too. You know, I don't know if he plays that fast.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back to the tape and watch him. Because I saw a guy who was like more 4.75, 4.8.
Yeah.
That's more 4.49. Yeah. But you also hear whispers of like maturity issues, right?
Yeah.
With him. And is he going to interview well? Also, we're not behind closed doors as often as NFL teams are.
Right.
So we won't be able to hear that. But you hear whispers when you talk to more scouts and coaches across the league.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see where he falls in this tight end class. But I don't think just because he ran a 4.49, he's all of a sudden going to be bumped up ahead of the Hunter Bryants and all those guys.
Right.
I think still he's still firmly a day three guy.
Yeah.
But now he's someone that you say, okay, he's a day three flyer with upside, with his athleticism, his speed. So it's going to be interesting to see where he falls in this draft class.
It is. But let's go ahead and move on to today's event where we have the offensive line and the running backs. Two positions that are considered really strong suits of this class, especially the offensive tackle class. We got guys like Tristan Wirfs, Andrew Thomas, Mekhi Becton, and all of those guys at offensive tackle. And Jedrick Wills, I forgot to mention him as well. Another guy who's expected to do everything here in Indianapolis. I want to see how those guys go out and compete. So let's talk a little bit about this offensive tackle class. And, you know, seeing them at the bench press yesterday, it was really cool seeing them compete out there. Tristan Wirfs put up, I believe, 24 reps on the bench. Andrew Thomas, 21. And
Becton,
23. So I want to see how they do go out there and compete against each other, just because a lot of them, or I should say all of them, have said they want to be the first offensive tackle taken.
Right. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, all of those guys are competitors. So with them testing today, just what are some of the things that you're looking for?
And it's just what you said, compete. I want to see these guys, how they look fluid in the drills. And I think it's going to be really important to see, you know, their pass sets, their kick slide. I want to see all of that. I think that's the most important drill for them. I want to see them play both left and right tackle. There's a lot of Tristan Wirfs, for example, played mostly right tackle. Yeah. I want to see him do his kick slide on the left side. Yeah. Because for some of these guys, it's not natural to move both sides. A lot of these guys say, oh, well, left tackles can play right tackle, right tackles can play left tackle. Mostly, they haven't played that side in their life. So it's going to be an awkward movement for them. So that, to me, is one of the biggest things, especially about how big versatility is now.
Yeah.
I want to see if both guys, if those guys can play both sides of the ball. And then, you know, a 40-yard dash, it's actually a pretty solid indicator for all these offensive tackles, right?
Yeah.
Terron Armstead, Lane Johnson are two perfect examples of that.
Yeah.
And one guy I think could really blow the roof off is Josh Jones from Houston. Yeah.
This your guy right here.
Dude, my favorite basketball player, former center in high school.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Josh Jones. I think he has great feet. The one thing you question with him is, you know, does he get enough drive in the run game? And but to me, I take the solid pass protector over that all day. I can find a good run blocker.
Yeah.
You can't find that many consistent pass protectors who can stay durable like he has. 4-year starter. I really do believe Josh Jones is a first round talent. And when we get to at the end of the day, and when it's all said and done, I don't think he escapes the top 20.
Yeah.
And I was explaining this to one of my NFL friends. I was saying, offensive tackles, like we said, is the one position that gets overdrafted more than any other position in football.
Yeah.
And it's because the supply and demand. Like I said, I can't find consistent, durable pass protectors like that who can move often. And because of that, I think he's going to go in the top 20.
And I'm with you. And the thing I always say when assessing these offensive tackles is that you can't really teach a guy to pass protect. It's really, really hard to do that just because all the footwork that's required, the timing, the hand punch, all of that stuff is required to become a seasoned pass protector. But it's much easier to keep or to teach a guy, I should say, to run blocks because you're moving vertical. You can teach him how to win in certain areas and certain concepts as well. And the run game is an area where Josh Jones does need to work a little bit. But pass protection, he has that down
already
walking through the door. And that's why I think he probably is going to end up going top 20, like you said. And that's the same buzz that I'm hearing now. Don't be surprised if he goes 10 to Cleveland. That would not surprise me.
Hey, we're here. Hey, one of the biggest things we talk about in Indianapolis is those whispers, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, the whispers. Hey, Cleveland Browns, Andrew Berry, come on down.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you.
He's a guy that's probably – we'll see how he does test today. I'm not going to jump the gun a little bit, but they're a big analytics team. Mm-hmm. And if he matches those analytics, I could see him being a pick at 10. That would not surprise me.
I'd be stunned if he's not one of the best testing tackles here.
Yeah, me too. I agree. And there's three guys that I think are going to blow the roof off of it. It's Josh Jones, Matt Peart, and Tristan Wirfs.
Yep.
Those are the three that I think are going to just test phenomenally. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
And then Matt Peart put up 27 reps.
How about that?
What, those 37-inch
arms?
How about
that? Yeah.
I do believe he's going to have a great day. You know, again, I keep harping on those former basketball players.
Yeah.
These multi-sport athletes who play offensive line, you can tell when they have good feet because they've been able to use that feet in other sports, right? Mm-hmm. And Peart, to me, I've been dogged by a lot of people over the draft network all week about, you know, why do I have him so high?
Staring at Ben Solette.
Yeah, exactly. So I have him in the second round. I gave him a second round film grade. And I got a lot of flack over that.
Yeah.
But to me, all of his issues are fixable.
Yeah.
I think he's a great run blocker. A guy who is physical, wants to, has that nastiness to his game. Really strong dude. We saw that at the bench press.
Yeah.
To me, this guy is an NFL-ready run blocker right away.
Yeah.
The question is, does he have the technical prowess to play left tackle immediately? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you give him a redshirt year or make him a swing tackle right away in his rookie season, and you give him a year to kind of develop, it's in year two, year three, he can be your starting left tackle.
Yeah.
And because I think a lot of his issues are fixable. He has good feet, good balance, and I think he has solid play strength. The question is to me, kick slide, pass sets. How smooth and fluid is that going to look?
Yeah.
Is he going to have any false steps out of his stance?
Right.
That's what I'm going to be looking for most in the drills, because I think in terms of the testing, he's going to test in the top tier of these tackles.
So the way I compare Matt Peart is that he's like a slab of beef that you already have on the table. Mm-hmm. You just need the chef to add the ingredients to it. I think that's a perfect synopsis of him. And I'm a fan of Matt Peart. I like what he brings to the table as far as a pass protector, but he has some work to do as a run blocker.
I agree.
What was the one thing that was labeled that he was weak in? It was his strength. But then he goes out, he throws 26 or 27 up on the bench press. So I think that's going to help him a lot. And it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up going top 75. Now, I know you have him top 30. I think that's a bit rich. Yeah, I don't think he's going to go first round, but we'll see.
And see, here's the thing with that is that I think, you know, on my next big board, it's going to be closer to the 40-50 range.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I want people to understand that, like I said, offensive tackles get drafted higher than any other position in football.
Mm-hmm.
And with his traits, I can't see why a team would take Tyus Howard in the first round last year and wouldn't take a guy like Pert in the first round this year.
Right.
And so if I'm a team needing offensive tackle, or it's a team like the Green Bay Packers, who's going to need offensive tackles going forward with those expiring contracts, I'd take a chance on Pert in the second round for sure. Because he has the traits you look for, and you can mold him with a good offensive line coach. He can be your starter for the next 6 to 8 years at left tackle.
And then we could see a team like the Cleveland Browns doubling up at tackle. They could take one at 10 and another one at 41.
Go back in the third round possibly and get one.
That wouldn't be surprising at all. So maybe you can double up and take a guy like Tristan Wirfs and then come back and get a Matt Pert in the second round. So that really would be interesting. Now, with these running backs, I think this is something that is talked about a little bit more than we were expecting, just because everybody was talking about the quarterbacks, everybody's talking about the receivers, everybody's talking about the DBs, but the running backs really have been the buzz of what's going on here, just because I think everybody's rankings are kind of all over the place. I think Swift and Dobbins are probably the consensus at the top, but after that, I mean, it's a complete shuffle of what everybody has in that second tier. So I'm looking to see guys compete like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Zach Moss, and plenty of other guys that we're looking forward to. So with this running back class, who is probably at the top of that second tier, would you say, is that third guy? Jonathan Taylor is probably the consensus third guy. Yeah. So I should say fourth or fifth guy. Who is that for you?
See, I have not talked to one person in the league or in the media or anyone else who has the same exact running back rankings.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting, right? But like you said, the top tier is kind of, you know, filled out as like DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, and guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, all those
Dobbins.
Guys, J.K. Dobbins. Yeah. To me, I think the next guy could be Cam Akers or
Love
Zach Moss.
Him. Love him.
And
Love
to him. Me, those two guys are vastly underrated.
Yeah.
And for different reasons, right? Zach Moss, because we don't see him a lot.
Yeah.
Pac-12 after dark,
watch
him a lot. Got hurt last year at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen a lot of Zach Moss, or at least a lot of the national media has. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big reason why he's not in that top tier, because he can really do it all.
Mm-hmm.
From a pass protection standpoint, pass catching-wise, very versatile, bell cow kind of runner. And a lot of these running backs, again, you're not going to pay him that much after their first contract. But if you want like rookie production right away, a guy who can produce right out the gate, Zach Moss is that guy. When we talk about Cam Akers, explosive, got powerful, mean streak, good receiver out of the backfield. I like everything he brings to the table. The problem was he played at Florida State, and Florida State was terrible.
Yeah.
Offensive line was bad.
Yeah.
And so I think he's one of these guys that can really surprise early on with his production, just because he'll have more lanes to work through here in the NFL.
Yeah, and he's going to be surprised with how big some of the running lanes are in the NFL, just because he was a guy that had to be a magician behind the line of scrimmage at Florida State, just because the offensive line was so bad at times. And that's something that he talked about that he had to persevere through. And I just love his story. His mom, he actually was talking about this. His mom has breast cancer. So that's something he had to deal with at an early age. And she's beat it now. So kudos to her and him. Shout out to those two with her persevering through that. But what she told him before he got to the combine was that you've already persevered through so much. And you use that with me going through breast cancer and you having to fight through the offensive line struggles. And that's the same type of battle that you're going to fight when you're here. So you've persevered through something that's much more fierce than what you're about to endure. So I thought that was pretty cool that he shared that. But I like Akers, man. I'm a big fan of him. He's probably going to end up as a top five guy for me. And I think his best days are ahead of him just because of what he had to fight when he was at Florida State. He really didn't get to show exactly what he could do. Now, some questions that he did want to answer, and I thought this was another great quote. He said that I asked him about, you know, some teams have some questions about your straight line speed. And he smiled and he said, don't worry, I'm about to answer that in the coming days. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I don't understand why people have questions about his speed. I think when he goes out and runs, you know, 4.5 flat or something like that, I think, you know, that's what you see on tape.
Yeah.
And I see an explosive player who didn't really have a lot of lanes to run through.
Right.
And I think he's one of those players that will get better at the next level where you haven't seen his best self. So Cam Akers, I think, is one of those ascending players who's gotten better each year we've seen him. And I can't wait to see what he does at the next level. But I want to transition topics. I know, you know, we're transitioning to the end of this podcast. But, you know, I want to talk about guys you've talked to, you know, the interviews, the press conferences. D-line, linebackers, corners, safeties. Yeah. Who are a couple guys that stood out to you?
So actually one today stood out to me, and that's Jeff Okudah. And something that I love to see with these defensive backs is that you want to see how much confidence they have. And starting from the beginning to the end, I mean, he had the most supreme confidence, but it wasn't in a cocky way or over the top. Mm-hmm. It was more of a controlled way. He was like, I know I'm good. I'm going to show that I know I'm good, but it's going to be in a respectful way. So Jeff Okuda definitely was one guy that stood out to me. Now, another one that I absolutely love was Clavon Chaisson, a guy we've talked about plenty of times on this podcast. And we wanted to see how he took the questions head on. And I asked him, actually, it was the first question in his press conference, and I said, address the misconceptions out there about you as a run defender. And he gave that terrific quote that we put on the site yesterday, was saying that whenever you hire somebody, do you want somebody that talks one language or do you want somebody that talks three languages? He said, I can rush the passer, I can drop in coverage. And I forgot the other one that he said, but it was terrific. That it was a terrific quote.
It's an elite quote. Yeah. That's so awesome. But like for me, two guys as well, start with the cornerback since you started with Okuda, Jalen Johnson. I thought he was so confident in what he said. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that's higher on Jalen Johnson than the rest of the consensus, right? A lot of people in the draft network don't think he's that good, and they think my take is a bad one. But at the same time, I think he's a top 30 player in this class. I think he's a guy I have as my fourth cornerback right now, behind Okuda, Gladney, and Henderson. And I think he's my the top of that second, third tier for me. And what he mentioned in the press conference was, I asked him, are you the best cornerback in this draft? And he said, yes. I said, why? He said, I guard the best receivers week in, week out. That's what I do. I shadow the best player. You ask me who the best player is, I'm on him. That confidence to guard that kind of guy, I think that's so contagious. That passion he plays with. And he did. He guarded Isaiah Hodgins. And Isaiah Hodgins, people don't know this, 10 catches, 3 straight weeks, 100 yards, 3 straight weeks. He shut him down to like 2 catches. Brandon Ayuk, same sort of thing, 1 catch for 7 yards. Jalen, there's such a thing as Jalen Johnson Island that nobody talked about this year. And I hope people go back and watch his film, because this guy truly was one of the elite corners in college football, and he really talked like one in the press conference. The second guy I want to mention, I cannot go without mentioning this guy, Marlon Davidson.
Yeah, that's your guy right
here. Defensive tackle, defensive end from Auburn. I want to give you a quote. And everyone talking about the one where he said, I'm a physically abused man, and the police can't come get me. That was an elite-level quote.
It was.
But this is my favorite one. He said, I'm going to go out there and whoop their tail. Then I'm going to come back and whip it again. Then I'll come back and do it again. So they're like, damn, I have to go up against Marlon Davidson every play.
Nice.
If that doesn't show you who Marlon Davidson is, man, I can't tell you. Because this is a guy who's contagious personality, bubbly guy, fun dude, who also just loves the game. And you can tell that he just plays a physical brand of football, and that he just, you know, lives it. And he made a promise to his mother before she died that he would take care of her, that she wouldn't have to, you know, work for money no more. He wouldn't do anything like that. And so when she died, he said, it's my time to fulfill that promise. And now he wants to reach the next level. And so that's what's fueling him right now. And that's why he came back to college. For his senior season, because his junior year he got like a third or fourth round grade from the committee. He wanted to be a first round pick, and from what he's shown on tape and what he's shown in the press conferences, I think he's really asserted himself in that discussion.
That's a really good story, man. And that's something else that you find out with these press conferences, is that you figure out why guys are here, but you understand their backstory and just all the stuff that they have went through. So it's really cool finding out that story. But today we have the running backs and the offensive line. Tomorrow, who we have tomorrow? We have
defensive line linebackers
tomorrow. So we'll be back to discuss that and also recap what happened today with the running backs and the offensive line. But as always, thank you guys for listening to the Locked On College Football Podcast. We will be back tomorrow with another great episode. Stay tuned. We are live here from Indianapolis, and we are here at the Tin Roof Restaurant. I forgot to mention that in the introduction. I want to make sure I get that in. So thank you guys for listening. We will be back tomorrow.